Althea could not choose, and yet she kept looking through the beads, searching for the one that was most perfect. "Why do you want to give me a gift?" she asked suddenly. Her quick glance caught Amber's pride in her handiwork. She gloried in Althea's absorption of her beads. The woman's sallow cheeks were almost warm, her golden eyes glowing like a cat's before a fire. When she spoke, the warmth rode her words as well. "I would like to make you my friend."
"Why?"
"Because I can see that you go through life athwart it. You see the flow of events. You are able to tell how you could most easily fit yourself into it. But you dare to oppose it. And why? Simply because you look at it and say, 'This fate does not suit me. I will not allow it to befall me.'" Amber shook her head, but her small smile made it an affirmation. "I have always admired people who can do that. So few do. Many, of course, will rant and rave against the garments fate has woven for them, but they pick it up and don it all the same, and most wear it to the end of their days. You would rather go naked into a storm." Again, the smile, fading as quickly as it blossomed. "I cannot abide that you should do that. So I offer you a bead to wear."
"You sound like a fortune teller," Althea complained, and then her finger touched something in the bottom of the basket. She knew the bead was hers before she gripped it between thumb and forefinger and brought it to the top of the hoard. Yet, when she lifted it, she could not say why she had chosen it. An egg, a simple wooden egg, pierced to be worn on a string on her wrist or neck. It was a warm brown, a wood Althea did not know, and the grain of the wood ran around it rather than from end to end. It was plain compared to the other treasures in the basket, and yet it fit perfectly in the hollow of her hand when she closed her fingers about it. It was pleasant to hold, as a kitten is pleasant to stroke. "Might I have this one?" she asked softly and held her breath. "The egg." Amber's smile came and stayed. "The serpent's egg. Yes, you might have that. You might indeed." "Are you sure you want nothing in return?" Althea asked baldly. She knew it was an awkward question, but something about Amber cautioned her that it was wiser to ask a rude question than to blunder about with the wrong assumption.
"In return," Amber asked smoothly, "I only ask that you allow me to help you."
"Allow you to help me what?" Amber smiled.
"Thwart fate," she replied.
You can't tidy if you've never learned how. When I tell people that my profession is teaching others how to tidy, I'm usually met with looks of astonishment. "Can you actually make money doing that?" is their first question. This is almost always followed by, "Do people need lessons in tidying?" It's true that while instructors and schools offer courses in everything from cooking and how to wear a kimono to yoga and Zen meditation, you'll be hard-pressed to find classes on how to tidy. The general assumption, in Japan at least, is that tidying doesn't need to be taught, but rather is picked up naturally. Cooking skills and recipes are passed down as family traditions from grandmother to mother to daughter, yet one never hears of anyone passing on the family secrets of tidying, even within the same household. Think back to your own childhood. I'm sure most of us have been scolded for not tidying up our rooms, but how many of our parents consciously taught us how to tidy as a part of our upbringing? Our parents demanded that we clean our rooms, but they, too, had never been trained in how to do that. When it comes to tidying, we are all self-taught. 1. They're always the same, always at night in the forest, looking for Drea. The sound of his body lurking somewhere behind me, branches breaking, leaves crackling, wind whirring in my ears, watering my eyes, and the pain in my stomach, sharp, raw, scathing, real. My nightmares make me dread sleep. I pinch the safety end of the razor blade between 3 fingers to write. Then I grab the virgin candle and carve the initials D-O-E-S into the rounded side. Tiny flakes of sparkling blue wax crumble from the surface with each incision and every drag of the blade. Drea's initials, but she doesn't suspect a thing. Just keeps scribbling away in her diary like any other night, sitting up in her bed only a few feet away. With the last curl of the S, I place the razor to the side and pluck a branch of sage from the drawer. It's perfect for burning, all dried up, the leaves shriveled, twisted, and gray. I wind a piece of string around it for a cleaner burn, so it won't be as smoky, so I'll have less chance of getting in trouble. Then I drop it into the orange clay pot by my bed. "Going to bed?" Drea asks. "In a few." I unscrew the cap of the bottle of olive oil and pour a few droplets onto my finger. She nods and yawns, caps her feather-tipped pen, and closes up the diary. "Just do me a favor and don't burn the dorm down. I have a serious history presentation tomorrow." "All the more reason," I joke. Drea and I have been roommates for a little over 2 years, so she's used to rituals like this. She rolls over onto her side and pulls the covers up to her chin. "Better not stay up too late. Don't you have a French test tomorrow morning?" "Thanks, Mom." I watch as she closes her eyes, as her lips settle for sleep, as the muscles around her forehead loosen and relax. It's sickening. Even after midnight, with no visible trace of makeup, not a smidge of cover-up, hair knotted up in a rubber band, she still looks perfect. Angled cheeks, salmon-pink pouty lips, loopy golden hair, and cat-shaped eyes with curled jet-black lashes. It's no wonder why every guy at Hillcrest wants her, why every girl hates her, why Chad keeps coming back, even after 3 breakups. I touch the top end of the candle with my oily finger. "As above," I whisper, then touch the bottom. "So below." I wet my finger with more of the oil and touch the center surface. I drag my finger upward, return it to the center, then drag it downward, careful to keep the carved letters pointing in my direction so she won't see. "Wouldn't it be easier just to wet the whole thing at once?" Drea asks, her eyes open, watching me. I turn the candle counterclockwise, blocking the letters with my palm, and continue moistening the circumference in the same fashion. "Probably, but that would confuse the energies." "Of course," she says, rolling over. "How ignorant of me." When the candle is fully anointed, I light it with a long wooden match and place it on the silver holder my grandmother gave me before she passed away. It's my favorite holder because it was hers. And it's sort of dish-like, with a curly handle that winds around the base. I close my eyes and concentrate on the waning moon outside. How it's an opportune night to make things go away. How the sage and the engraved candle will help. I light the branch and watch it burn. The leaves curl up and dance in an orangey-yellow flame, then turn black and disappear. The way I pray my nightmares will.